This episode of Ticket Volume is brought to you by us, Invigate. Get service operations under control in no time. Get one free month of our software solution by going to try.invigate.com. Ticket Volume is proud to present a veteran of the IT industry with over two decades of work experience, and he's worked globally across consulting, managed service providers, and other organizations across verticals like financial services, health and life sciences, energy and utilities, retail, among others. He's served in roles in delivery, IT service management, risk and compliance, business development, pre-sales, training, and other leadership roles. He's passionate about servant leadership and loves driving transformation initiatives with a customer mindset attitude. Welcome to Ticket Volume, news and information for improving IT experiences. I am your host, Matt Barron, and each week I chat with different leaders to share insights on service management, technology, and business. This episode is no exception. I hope you're having a great week. And what are you looking to learn about? Leave a comment, connect with us, find me at a conference, tweet me, something. Share our podcast with someone. Now, let's begin. Welcome to Ticket Volume, Jivan Lobo.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Matt. It's a privilege to be a part of your so-called maybe 101st episode, but I feel so honored to be a part of your podcast. Congratulations on your 100th podcast, by the way.
Well, it's 1 year. We are going to make it to 100 eventually. We're only, I think you'll be episode 54, because we do one a week, but there are live episodes now. So just a little plug, if you're listening to this, make sure you tune into a live episode. And what a breadth of experience. You know, we had a chance to meet recently. Sanjay and Nara actually introduced us, and you have so much broad and deep experience that it's almost impossible to cover it all in one episode. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about right away is something that we don't get to touch on very often on this podcast, because so many people are active. They're, you know, performing operations, their services are up, they're in organizations that are old and kind of trying to really optimize IT. But you told me recently about a story about growing into an organization that was greenfield, actually getting to like start the service management journey. So what was that? What was that like?
Oh, thank you. Great question to begin with, Matt. So, you know, around 4 years ago, that was my first stint in New Jersey, because when I first landed in the US, I was in St. Louis. So I got called in to be a cross-functional IT service manager for this big pharma company. And, you know, like most pharma companies, I mean, I don't know, most, this company was particularly doing their service management, but in side note, maybe in Excel sheets. They never had an incident management tracking, or they never knew how many incidents per month, or what the whole change management process, for example, was something alien to them. I wouldn't say they wouldn't do it, but they would do it in pieces. It's not integrated across, say, infrastructure and application. And then comes so I was working with a managed service provider then, Cognizant. We both worked in Cognizant for some time. So, and they got in me. So like we won the deal, both for a lot of services, infrastructure services, application services, service management tool. We were using ServiceNow then, and the process part of it. And like, you know, when you get a new vendor in, you go through the entire cycle of the knowledge transition, so we had a transition manager, and I was called in as the delivery guy to head the cross-functional IT service management team. So, okay, from a customer point of view, they saw it all. They saw a lot of folks coming in, asking them zillions of questions and asking them, why not? Can you do this? And then comes your true me who comes in there and then looks staringly at their eye and they say, so what are you going to do? That's literally, right? So, I mean, but you know, when you go back, the things that I understood was, you know, and this came through learning, not at that project, but in my past, is that you never try to counter by the eye, in the sense you go sit back, let them know, understand and listen as to why they felt, because most people do not accept change very easily. And for them, you know, there were a lot of softer things in addition to people of the risk of people losing their jobs,
perhaps.
The fact of them moving to something which they're very comfortable with, moving to an integrated service management tool, follow a new process. So there were so many things. There were so many layers at various levels. But long story short, now the and thanks a lot for in the introduction, you spoke about the customer mindset and the servant leadership. These are the tenets I use a lot and just help me become successful. Of course, we work a lot alongside people, be it customers, partners, or the leadership. But, you know, we sing the same story along. And if you ask me, did I have a rough time? Yes, I did. It was not a piece of cake to just go there and sit and say, hey, you know what? From day one, you're going to see a new thing. But it took us a good 30, 45 days. And it all started with the leadership. So they wanted to know, they were oblivious of how many tickets they were getting or why they were getting tickets, what changes they were doing. And then because people were doing stuff, I agree, but they were not doing it the way a leadership would want to see it. So then month one, so we did weekly scorecards, then we did monthly reports, so-called, and then when we aggregated them over a month and then a quarter, the leadership knew the value that we were bringing in to their organization. So simple, basic things like tracking of number of incidents a month, a number of incidents per site of their manufacturing sites, right? Because they had this customer had a lot of manufacturing sites. So we were able to capture after doing all the basic configurations, we got. So just providing them some analysis to play around with, really, that was the first step. And that really, you know, level set their eyes, you know, started opening up. They said, okay, here's a partner who know what we want. At least they're letting us know our productivity before we went into quality and other aspects. So, but it was a good, I really am thankful for getting that opportunity. Made a lot of friends, both on the customer side, also my peers. Some of them work with me, some of them have moved places, but it's so nice. You relive that journey. It's really helped me to be where I am today.
Yeah, I hear you. The first enterprise project that I had doing an implementation, it really felt like that. You know, you get everyone in the room and you just want to tell people, like, don't worry, you're not going to lose your job. We actually need you in other capacities more than this. And it's tough to, like, get over that hump and get people. You have a lot of conscious objectors, people who are just trying to fight the change because they don't really know what the change is. And they want their job to be fun and easy, because who doesn't? Yeah. So you said it took 35 to 40 days. So what was that? Is that just like the come to reality moment? Like, we're going to assess where we're at?
Yeah. So, you know, we would go to, I remember this, such a funny moment, but, you know, it would be a 9 a.m. stand-up call. And we would all be there in the meeting room. Of course, the first few days, people wanted to see presence, and this was pre-COVID. So, you know, you want people to come in office. Of course, not as suited up, but come to office and just provide them. They would like to know, okay, so what we've invested in a vendor, right? A managed service provider. What value are we bringing to the table? So start with something basic. What is my team doing? Are we raising too many changes? What are changes? People were alien to the concept of problem management. What is RCE? So what is, like, you know, we and the fact that we told them, not just by sheer talk, but by actual data, like by stating to them, hey, you know what, you've got just a number, you've got 1,000 incidents per week, and most of those incidents are coming from a location. And most of them are because of a particular issue, maybe an application causing an issue. And this happens because of a particular time of the week or the month. Then they said, okay, we knew this happened, but we didn't know to this extent and this level. Okay, so can you go and figure out why that's happening? And that's when we got in problem management, which means, I know our viewers are very knowledgeable, but it's more about root cause analysis, doing the five whys. Why would this happen? And, you know, going through that entire route. And for them to, you know, for example, event monitoring, why do we have event management? So we got into each and every facet of service management. And they really appreciated the value we could bring, because to get people, for example, in change management as a principle, they never had something called as the CAPS, the Change Advisory Board. They would have someone making a decision somewhere because you don't have ServiceNow as a tool. People are doing things independently. They just have an email blessing. That's it. No one's held accountable, no ownership. And here we go into a CAB meeting. You've got your infrastructure head. You've got your application services head. You've got a security head. You've got your end user services head. Boom. All of them go. They're on a table. They're on a meeting together, both from the vendor side and the customer side. And then you have the CIO who's also blessing it. And they say, this change is going to go. It's huge. This is the impact that's going to happen. So look at the level of preparedness, the approval. So they saw value. They saw real value because the same business who would go back and complain to them automatically started showering them with praises and appreciations. And they said, okay, yeah, this is what we wanted to hear. So did I achieve my return on investment? The CFO says, yes. Okay, what else you have to show? And that's where the journey began, the partnership began. And I'm so blessed and grateful that I had an opportunity to play a role in that engagement.
Man, that's such a good story. And thank you for living through that trauma so that we can all benefit. and so what like, if you, let's say, you know, times have changed, of course, right? We've come a long ways. ITIL has changed the way that we operate, the way that we consult. Everything just continues to evolve. What advice would you give to either consultants or IT leaders that are in that same situation, right? They're managing change via email or some other system that's not compliant, I'll say. Or they're just getting started on incident management, or they want to get towards maturity. What metrics or what guides or advice would you give to those people?
Yeah, great question again, Matt. So the way, you know, I would go with the simple, I start with very basic, right? Before you go advanced, go basic. I know we are talking about senior leaders, people with CXCs in the prefixes, in their designations, that's fine. But we need to always, I believe, in coming to the table, partnering and listening. So we need to understand their story. Why do they want it and for what reason? I can propose the best metrics in the world, you have so many tools in the world, but if it's not customized to the way you want it to behave, it's of no use. So go back to the drawing board, ask them what would they like to see and why. Get that out of them. Sometimes you get it easily. Sometimes it depends on the stakeholders. Some of them are like, okay, I want this. They were very brutal enough to say, this is what I want, and I don't care how you do it, you do it. Some of them have had some finesse to it, and but end of the day, they all have some story. They need something. So my advice to them is, okay, wherever you are, whatever you do, start baselining and benchmarking always, because you wouldn't know how much you want to improve until you know where you are. So, it's quite ironically, I do this as my job with numbers and volumes. I got recently presented this Apple Watch, right? And I hate to see a lot of metrics because I already do this at work, and a lot of metrics telling me this is what you need to do and this is how you did and this is your trend. But trust me, this is the digital world. You need to know where you are to improve, otherwise you're going to go behind. So the starting advice to anyone out there for me is start collecting data, review them, however it is. Okay, for all you know, you're looking at a wrong tool, a wrong data set, or wrong something. Start, right? Just like how my gym instructor at CrossFit tells me, it's not about you improving, it's just coming and showing up to the gym. So start somewhere, and then once you started, then you look at and value. Of course, you need to know what you want, and they should be consultants, like in the form of managed service providers or like the Big Fours or others who can recommend to get here. This is what you need to do. This is the approach. And let them have a lot of buy-in. Otherwise, if they're not sold onto it, and if they don't, because they're going to propagate your opinions or suggestions or recommendations to the board, and if they don't trust it or buy in wholly, you're not going to go anyway. So those are my two cents. One is baseline benchmark data and start doing it from day one. Secondly, know you where you want to go. And three, try to get them invested completely so that they can build your case whenever it's required. Hope you found my answers satisfactory, sir.
Beyond satisfactory. That was gold, dude. I really like the point that you made about starting with why. I actually recommend to leaders to actually like record the why. Get a video of the executive stakeholders that are just saying it, because these service management initiatives, they never end. And so you're going to want to keep, you know, informing people why. And when new people join the project, like, tell them why and just keep repeating that why. I also really, really, really like the point where you say, your analogy to the Apple Watch, because once you know why and you start managing those metrics, it really influences the behaviors. Just getting those in front of people, it causes change. I think about how often I sit now. I used to never think about that, but the watch, it nags me, or, you know, and the same thing happens in service management. You know, if you're watching the change volume, then you're looking at the change volume. If you're looking at the number of changes that used to be normal changes that are now standard changes, like, those are the metrics where you really start to see improvement. And it helps people get energy and passion to continue growing on that. Great, yes. Great answers. So you've migrated. Obviously, you're not in a greenfield role anymore. That was a long time ago. And now you're doing this cross-functional role at Citibank. Is that right?
No, I play I'm more in the security and governance side. I'm in the security and governance. I take care of two main, I do quite a lot, but the top two, what I do is completely on risk and compliance, where I support with audits, internal, external audits. I help with GRC, that's governance, risk, and compliance. Being a metric guy, metrics never leave me for some reason. So that's partially my role. And I also support a lot in product strategy for the products we engineer, which are consumed by a lot of our consumers and application users.
Okay. So when you're looking at your job, like, you know, this week you're supporting global engineering teams, you're thinking about product strategy, you're meeting with executives to develop all of this. What does a day in the life kind of look like? What has prepared you for this point? And when you explain your job to your kids or to your family members, what do they say?
You know, for anyone looking at it, my kids are teenagers now, but otherwise, they were just looking at me sitting at a laptop with some PowerPoints and some Excel sheet and some numbers. And then I'm always on a headset usually and, you know, just speaking. So for a layman, well, this is what you do. It's so simple, so easy. But, you know, the pain that goes behind putting those numbers, presenting, the finesse you put in, the thought, you know, understanding the dynamics, the politics, how much to say, how much not to say is so freaking important. I mean, you know, you know what I'm talking about. But
yeah.
And so the day in my life, you know, it varies. There could be some business transformations, which I'm either driving for a function or internally for a bigger cause. But yeah, so there are a lot of things. So three main things go definitely as a part of my role. One are the BAU tasks. The business as usual activities would be more like your metrics. Are you in order? Are you able to keep the lights green, right? So whatever stuff that we do, are they going as smooth as they should? The second big ones are, you know, when we are supporting bigger initiatives. It could be an internal audit. It could be fire. Maybe we have some timelines to be met. In fact, last week when I spoke to you, I was in the middle of that fire where, you know, we had a deadline of 4/28, which is today, and luckily we got it done yesterday. So otherwise, we're here on this podcast. So there are some things that you need to take care of, because they are more transformational for your function, for unit, either driven by others or you support them as the key representative for your team. And the last one is more on the product strategy side, where you're constantly working with vendors and trying to see how can you make your products more secure, because my key role over the years has transitioned, and being in the industry I am in, risk and compliance, security has been my has been the key. So, you know, so just working with these vendors, trying to evaluate the best in class out there, trying to customize it to our environment, a lot of communication, internal and external. But yeah, it's fun. I love it. I'm very happy and blessed that I have this. It's a lot of communication across the globe. Thanks to a global team, I get to learn a lot of languages. I get to, like, you know, I'm trying to, like, you know, sing some songs in different languages. That's where you can you can get to know the language better. But yeah, it's really good. It's really nice. And it's been a good, some days are better than the others, I should say. Like, today is better than my previous week. But it's all a part of the day.
Yeah, GRC is stressful, right? And at a financial institution, you've got tons of compliance to deal with, right? You guys are ISO 20001, right?
Yeah.
You hear GRC, and it's kind of hard for people to understand, but you said it perfectly. You're really trying to get service teams, designing teams, DevOps teams, the services teams, to build with security and compliance in mind from the beginning. Right. And that does, you're right, it takes tons of convincing. You have to kind of connect the dots, work upstream and downstream to kind of understand where that's at. And this move from consultant to practitioner, that's always an interesting one. These bigger orgs, they usually grow by acquisition, right? You mentioned Cognizant. We both worked for Cognizant. Mm-hmm. I worked as part of two acquisitions that they made. They bought my company. And I've actually worked for Cognizant twice because they bought my company twice.
Oh, wow.
So what do you say, like, when you're in GRC and Citi's going to grow by acquisition, how do you deal with that? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I want to give a great example here. While I was in I just mentioned about the Greenfield project that I managed some time back. So that was more like a phase one. And hardly we were 2 years, we thought we did well. We were doing brilliant in terms of, you know, getting accolades, achievements. And we thought barely we were settling in. Then came an announcement, boom. Your client is going to be acquired by another client. So you guys have to be, we're going to figure out whether we need two vendors, whether we need to have two ServiceNow instances, processes. So I've been through that, through the same project in New Jersey. So it was with quite a, I had the experience. It was, of course, the first time is always a learning. But yeah, that's helped me to understand the whys as to, you know, of course, you understand from the financial aspect of it, but more importantly, in terms of why do you need to have two tools, what would be better? And remember, you are always dealing with one company, Company A, with a specific sort of a culture, mindset, and then you're bought by a parent company. You don't know what they are and how they work, but yet you can go up to an extent where you can propose the best practice worked in a similar company of a similar nature. But you'll still have to go work with your partners and design what's best, you know, take the best of both. Sometimes in some cases, or just ignore both and build something new. So those are the things that I learned and picked up the same project while I was in Cognizant. But yeah, when it comes to letting go, it becomes a little hard. There are, besides the aspects of tools, process, there's also a human part of it, in the sense that, you know, people are, either there's a scare of a loss of a job,
yeah,
you feed to a family, or in terms of you need to expand your skill set, or it could be a division merger or closure or part of, there's so many things, but the way these things are handled becomes more important. So, you know, that's, and I'd rather go among all the things that I would like to stress and emphasize, I think relationships matter the most. You don't know when you're going to bump into anyone, and the more smoothly and the more you communicate is better, rather than, you know, going one shot and saying, hey, tomorrow's the last day or whatever it is. It's so, just to give you my two cents on this, Matt.
Yeah, M&A is an interesting thing. You know, how do you join two companies up? It's like two families, you know, during when you propose to someone and you're going to get married, you never really think about how your families are going to get together until the wedding day. And then it's like, okay, are they all going to dance together? Do they fit? Do they? You don't think about that energy necessarily because, you know, you're selfishly thinking I'm going to marry this person, but really it's two families coming together. And that M&A activity is always so fascinating to me. And you mentioned divestitures, and it's kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you then operate on your own? How do you then segment yourself off? I really like the Berkshire Hathaway tactic where they don't necessarily tie all their subsidiaries together. They kind of keep them separate.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of makes sense because if you're going to adopt children and then send them off to college, you want to make sure that they're ready on both ends. It just makes it easier.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into some really nerd stuff. You're an ITIL expert, and I don't think I've had that many ITIL experts on. Plenty of ITIL authors, but I don't know how many experts I've had on. What does that mean to you? Does that solve all your problems? Does that make you the best in the IT industry?
So you're taking me back, nostalgic. I did my, I'm a ITIL V3 expert, and I did this in 2015, February, if my memory serves me right. And at that point of time, I used to only play delivery roles, and I somehow got motivated by my peers, and they said, okay, you take one paper, there are seven papers. So I took it up, and I never knew when it would come handy until I got this Greenfield project I spoke about. But yeah, the common misconception is, hey, he's the continuous improvement guy. He's the ITIL guy. He has the magic wand. Just ask him to come over. He's going to fix all your problems. But in reality, does it work like that? No, definitely no. Because ITIL, what is ITIL? Or ITIL is a global set of business practices. You've got some best practices. You've got processes. You've got some metrics to help and aid you. But until you get into the customer's shoes, until you understand, and I'm going back to what I said sometime back, what do you advise IT leaders and what do you do? You'll have to go very nascent, very basic, and ask them, what is your problem? What do you want to... It sounds so basic. It sounds so elementary, I would say, but that's what is required. You start from there and then figure out, okay, maybe to solve a problem X, I would use an ITIL principle Y. And that's how it's got to map together. And then to make this better, I will include processes, and then I'll do the value stream mapping, and then I'll introduce metrics. So these are my aids, which are going to make my process or my problem get resolved, because I'm going to show you the path, and I'm going to do the whatever we spoke about, process, tools, metrics. So that's, but yeah. But people definitely get confused. They assume an ITIL guy is going to solve everything the moment, you know, it doesn't work like that. But are they capable enough? So if I go back retrospectively and question that to me now, because today my role is completely risk and compliance. I'm so fortunate. I'm so happy. I did my ITIL expert. I got a good opportunity to work in a lot of organizations, both banking and financial, where I was doing service management. And that thought and approach has helped me in my current role, because I still go back and do the RCAs. I still go back and ask continuous service improvement. I still go back. I have those tenets and the metric part of it. You spoke of that metric part of it. We have service SLA or service management as one of the tools, service level, one of the processes, or I don't remember. I follow that in GRC. So everything is adaptable, customized. I'm just bringing a part of me there into this. And I'm so, you know, you say your heart is somewhere else, but your soul is here. So I somehow have that feeling. I speak to Jeffrey Tifotella, a lot of these guys. We have a lot of common friends because I still have that service management mindset, and it really helps me. Like, you know, so the base is always service management, because you want to continuously add value. You want to provide good metrics, you want to have a good customer mindset, all of them come through ITI. So I'm so thankful for the base that I had in being an ITIL expert.
I can tell that you're an ITIL expert because you answered that question by saying it's basics. You got to go back to the basics. You know, it's boring, but beautiful, because you need that foundational to that foundational element, that foundational understanding of how things operate, just to operate, just to exist. It really does take that foundation to grow from there. So speaking of growing, what are you learning about right now? What's got you excited in the service management space?
Oh, when I last used service management as a tool or ServiceNow as a tool, we never had all these advanced modules. So GRC was not there. You only had your vanilla. I'm calling them vanilla now because way back, that was what we had. We just had the very basic ITBM, ITOM had just come in. And you just had your vanilla. When I say vanilla, you have change problem config, asset was developing, and you had all those modules. Then you had the project functionality, PPM. But now when you look at it, you've got, you've got functionality-based suites. You've got HRBM, you've got procurement, you've got whatnot. So if you ask me, if I get an opportunity to help, and there are a lot of ServiceNow initiatives, by the way, where we work, but I'm not inbuilt with them. But the things that I am, since I'm on the security side, I recently did my ISO 27001. Which really helped me and is really helping me because I am the front end champion to lead an internal external audits. And my mindset has always been CYA, wherein you just do your job, you provide what is required and why. But now, after having done the ISO and looking at it from the other side, I know the question behind the why and why are you going to do this and for what reason, which has really helped me perform my role better, in the sense that now whenever the audit's going to come 2 months from now, I think I'm better geared, better prepared, because I know what's my follow-up question and how I need to prepare with it. I've got all my ammunition covered, you know, so that, and that's why the ISO 27 has helped. I'm looking forward to do my CISSP. It's a big one, but they say only when you manifest, you get it done. I'm still figuring out the time and how I'm going to do it. It's got a lot of domains. It's got a lot of things, but that's something which is on the wish list. It may take months, it may take 6 months, a year, but I've been doing this as a part of my job. So I feel it should be easier, but that's something that's like a wish list that I want to do. So
you're not more.
Good point. Yeah, nothing really makes you feel more comfortable about an audit than going through them. A lot of times, there's no shortcut around that. Awesome response. So, Jivan, how can people connect with you and learn more?
I am on LinkedIn, and you know, you just search on my Jivan Lobo. I usually participate in some of the interesting conversations where I feel I can add value. I don't get into all of them. Service management, a lot of Jeffrey T. Fatellas, and there are some people who add some triggering thoughts, which make me, you know, add on to them. So I'm mostly on LinkedIn. I'm looking at you. I'm inspired to maybe, you know, doing based on this question, maybe have a page or have people lead to me. But maybe that's something for 2024, not for the present. But currently, they could reach me on LinkedIn, or my details are there, which is my email address and my number. But I'm more than happy to help people, even if it means just a call to ask, you know what, I'm going through with this. Do you have any suggestions? I'm more than happy, because by helping others, you learn. They say the way, by serving others, you can help more, and I'm more than happy to. You don't know what they're into. I might have gone through that or I might have not, but the very experience of acquainting with the person would help me in any way. So that's the way I look at things. So yeah.
Thanks for being on Ticket Volume, Jivan.
Thanks a lot, Matt. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
For the rest of our audience, thanks for listening to this episode. We've got a bunch more out there with music, without. So make sure to subscribe to receive an alert every time there's a new one. You can also submit a specific topic or guest by DMing me or leaving a comment on Ticket Volume's LinkedIn page. If you put it on the internet, I'm going to see it. And speaking of that, if you did like today's podcast, leave feedback on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Every time that you do, the algorithm will reward us for your interactions. This podcast is brought to you by Invigate, the all-in-one IT service and asset management system that helps organizations with world-class IT support teams. If you're looking for a solution to build your help desk without the headaches of year-long implementations and huge total cost of ownership, you will love Invigate. In fact, IT teams from People's Bank, Toyota, and McDonald's use Invigate to manage requests, automate workflows, and centralize inventory data so that they can focus on delivering great service. Because remember, good service is good business.